ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, leadership has emerged as a major concern for coalition parties around the nation this November. Also known colloquially as the killing season, leaders don't always get toppled in the lead up to Christmas, but talk of challenges and coups invariably fire up at this time of the year, especially when polling numbers aren't being too favourable for a particular leader or party. In the federal sphere, of course, Liberal leader Susan Lee's finding herself the focus of a lot of leadership talk as she tries to cling onto her job while trying to release coherent policy, keeping the lid on rising factional unrest and dealing with runaway egos within the ranks. But in the States, blood has already been spilled. The killing season is well underway with just over 12 months until Victorians head to the polls. The opposition leader, Brad Batten, has been ousted for a first-term MP, Jess Wilson, who's only been in the parliament for a few years. She's 35. She was the shadow treasurer, was elected unopposed after Brad Batten did not stand following a successful spill motion yesterday. She's the first woman to lead the party's Victorian division. It's third leader in 11 months after John Pesutto was deposed in late December, and will mean an all-female leadership challenge at the next election, you'd think. She says she'll offer generational change, but at a press conference this afternoon didn't have answers for repeated questions about what might change regarding party policy and direction, but rather stuck to her talking points.
Today,
this happened today.
The Liberal Party room spoke very, very clearly.
Why though?
They spoke very, very clearly
why?
About the fact that we need to put our best foot forward at the next election and ensure that we were going to put our best foot forward at the next election, put a team together that can take us to the next election and provide that credible alternative to Victoria.
Can you explain why that couldn't happen under Brad Batten?
Sorry.
Can you explain why?
Not delivering for
Victoria.
Is that how you see it?
Brad has done a terrific role, and I thank him for his service. I thank him for his leadership, but more broadly for his service to the Liberal Party over many, many years. And I know that Brad will have a key role going forward in the lead up to the next election.
If he's done a terrific job, then why are you standing there saying not Brad Batten?
The Liberal Party room has spoken. I'm humbled by their support.
Well, there you have it. The new Liberal leader in Liberal leader of the the coalition in Victoria, Jess Wilson, setting out her priorities as she sees them. It's as I say, the killing season continued in New South Wales. Senior Liberals are bracing for a leadership showdown there this week too, with opposition leader Mark Speakman's future also in danger. The New South Wales opposition leader avoided a challenge at a party room meeting this morning, but you know what, it's only Tuesday, and speculation has been building for months that another first-termer, Kelly Sloan, will take the party to the next state election in early 2027. The New South Wales Nationals too suddenly attained a new leader this week after former leader Dougal Saunders' shock resignation yesterday. A former blueberry farmer, now Coffs Harbour MP Gurmesh Singh, was voted in as leader. He was the only candidate when National MPs met at State Parliament this morning. And also former Liberal Senator in New South Wales and factional opponent, and no love lost with Angus Taylor, factional opponent of Angus Taylor, former Senator Holly Hughes, now these days a commentator, very much handed back her ticket to the Liberal Party, said she's resigned.
I have always supported the leader. I have always supported the party. But when I look at the undermining that is going on and I see some of the people that are doing it, I want to be able to give you and any other media outlet that I talk to the absolute home truths about it without the hypocrisy of being a paid up member of the Liberal Party.
Yes, Ms. Hughes speaking on Sydney Commercial Radio this afternoon. Well, joining us amid this spate of killing season carnage is Katina Curtis, Canberra Bureau Chief for the West Australian. Katina, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Great to be here, Phil.
Victoria, New South Wales, the Nationals, probably soon the Liberals. A few weeks ago, the Liberal leadership in the ACT also changed. It's getting hard for a correspondent these days to keep up with the names, isn't it?
It sure is.
How are things in WA, by the way? Hang on. Basil Zemplis is still there.
He's still there.
That means he's the longest serving. He'll be the longest serving coalition leader in the country, won't he?
Depends if what happens with Mark Speakman in New South Wales. At the moment, Mark Speakman's the longest serving Liberal opposition leader, followed by the South Australian, whose name escaped me, but was only put in the job, I think, August last year. But Basil Zemplis was only elected in March. So if Speakman falls in New South Wales, then yes, Basil elected in March will be the second longest serving Liberal opposition leader, which is pretty extraordinary. It certainly seems like a bad time to be a Liberal leader at the moment.
Yes. Next week, I mean, some listeners last night were saying, you know, why don't you lay off Susan Lee? And there might be some sympathy there, I imagine. Next week will be the final sitting week of the year for federal parliament. There is some speculation that Susan Lee might yet face a leadership challenge from either Angus Taylor or Andrew Hastie. It's not unusual. Numerous leaders have been turfed out by their own party in the final weeks of the political year. It's a time for it, isn't it? Bob Hawke in 1991, Kim Beazley 2006, Malcolm Turnbull in 2009. Although the news out of the party room seemed to be, if it's going to happen, it won't happen next week. What do you think?
I mean, it's certainly, I think both Angus Taylor and Andrew Hastie are sort of feeling like they'd rather, give her a bit more time or a bit more rope, perhaps, get themselves in a better position to be sure of their numbers and, you know, perhaps get over the really troubled spot that the party's in at the moment. They would prefer to wait till next year. But, yes, funny things happen when they all get in a room in Canberra and eyeball each other, and it wouldn't surprise me if we did end up with a sudden instability or someone who's not really part of the inner sanctum of any one team decides to pull the pin for whatever reason they decide. It's definitely a silly season in Canberra and killing season as well.
Yes, there was interesting. I mean, inside the New South Wales Libs party room, there was interesting because they had internal YouGov research about a range of matters, including whether to dump net zero, that they decided that they weren't going to do it. So it's a kind of pretty odd situation. The federal party says it's over. The state parties are saying, not here.
Yeah, and at the federal Liberal meeting last week, their party director, Andrew Hirst, presented them with some research that, as far as I understand it, basically said, look, voters see net zero as a proxy for action on climate change, and so dropping it is not a good idea because voters really want action on climate change. And then he sort of said, you know, if you were to dump it, then, you know, here are some of the way, like, here's the best way you go about framing that argument, which I think some took to be like, you know, it's fine, we can dump it and we can argue our way out of this, whereas others took it to be like, you know, he was really saying don't do this, but they did it anyway. I think as far as where the state parties are positioning themselves, I mean, I've seen that in WA as well. Basil Zemplis was originally saying only a mug would walk away from this. He has softened that language a little bit, but I think the state parties are perhaps a bit closer to their voters and a bit more conscious of what can happen. But actually, I mean, what the federal government does obviously sets a national tone and national goals and so on, but actually almost all the states have their own individual emissions reduction goals, and they are a lot of them, you know, actually in charge of the electricity infrastructure and those sorts of things, so they do have a fair amount of sway in this space as well.
Yes. All right, look, on to policy. The Conservative right has seen off net zero for the federal coalition, but the opposition's now saying the next policy issue, the next battleground it wants to tackle is immigration. National Senate leader Bridget McKenzie commented on this today. She says she shouldn't be called a racist for wanting to have honest discussions about migration, that the party doesn't have a specific intake figure in mind, but she reckons we need to have respectful and honest conversations.
We're a country of migrants. If you've been here 50,000 years, five generations or 5 years, you need to be able to say how many, where are they going to live, what skills are they bringing with us, and do they share our values? If you hate gay people and don't think women should be the Prime Minister, you shouldn't be here.
Shadow Home Affairs Minister Jonathan Dunham Also indicated today that the coalition won't put a number on how much it wants to slash migration by until the party room's gone through a policy process, although reports suggest it could promise to slash annual net migrant intake by at least 100,000. The senator says areas such as housing and health need to be looked at before settling on a figure.
How can our education system support immigrants who want to educate their young in our schools? How can our public infrastructure system support those people? And again, then once you've got those sorts of numbers, you can work backward from that to figure out the sort of number we should be working with.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of sounds simple when you put it like that, of course, but it's devilishly complicated, as we know, because after all, who are you going to say can't come,
Katina?
I mean, the truth is, though, that the governments, I think, would like it to be around about 180,000, 200,000. It's well above that now, probably more than 100,000 above that now. So they would also like to probably see it cut by 100,000. But it's hard. I mean, the onus is on people who say they want to cut it to, what are you going to cut? Students? Are you going to cut backpackers? Are you going to cut family reunions? Are you going to cut skilled migrants? And these will all have impacts domestically, won't they?
Yeah, and it is incredibly complicated, and it really depends on also which type of migration you say you're going to cut. So the level that's about, I think it's at 185,000 this year, it's unchanged from last year, that's permanent migration. But actually, around about two-thirds of people who get permanent residency in Australia are actually living here already on some kind of, you know, temporary skilled visa or student visa or something like that already. So they're kind of, in a way, most of that 185,000 is actually not adding to the population or the pressures. The level that the coalition seems to be talking around is the temporary migration, but that is, as you say, much more difficult to cut. That's when you start drilling down into that, you say, okay, well, are we going to, you know, completely devastate our international education sector and the universities and vocational providers? Are we going to stop fruit pickers coming or the Pacific Island workers coming to work on the farms that voters in the Nationals areas really rely on? Are we going to stop, long-term tourists? Are we going to stop the people coming on skilled visas who are, you know, tradies or the place, you know, the very people that we need to be building the houses that are in such dire shortage? It's kind of got us in this position, healthcare workers, aged care workers, childcare workers. So yes, when you actually start looking at the detail, which is what the shadow ministers John O'Donoghue and Paul Scar are working through right now, like, it is incredibly complicated, and I don't envy them that job.
No, not indeed. Well, meanwhile, the leader of the One Nation Party, Pauline Hanson, is looking like the cat with the cream at the moment, given their poll numbers. And she says, well, we will write about everything, pretty much. She's speaking with the ABC's AM program this morning.
One Nation, we've been setting the agenda for many years now to do with mass migration, to do with, you know, climate change, with The Voice. Everything that we've set in place, the coalition have followed our lead on this.
She also says that wayward National MP and former Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce might follow her lead. Indeed, she's going to discuss this over dinner soon. I don't know whether it'll be a fish and chip dinner, but as she told Sarah Berlain on AM,
I will be heading to Canberra next week, so I hope to catch up with Barnaby next week, and I intend to cook him dinner and have a good chat with him.
What's going to be on the agenda?
Well, I'm going to have a good talk with him about whether his prospects will be better with One Nation, because with the National Party, I'm about 4 or 5% at the moment. I think 18% looks a lot more healthy to him. So anyway, we can forge ahead because we're on the same page as Net Zero, and working together we can do a lot for the country.
So if you're cooking him dinner, it sounds like you want him on board.
Of course I want him on board. I won't deny that. And I've said that all along. Of course I want him on board.
There you go. No indication as to whether Mr. Joyce, well, maybe he works out whether he thinks he likes what Pauline's cooking, I suspect, Katina.
That could be. I mean, I think he's made it clear he doesn't intend to rejoin the National Party room at this stage, even though they've dumped Net Zero, which was his stated reason for splitting with the party. There's a lot more personality issues there between himself and leader David Littleproud as well, I think. Look, I mean, it's. I think he definitely would appear to be contemplating joining One Nation or running for them in some capacity at the next election. He has said he's not going to run in New England again, and I think there's a lot of speculation that he might head back to the Queensland Senate race, which was obviously where he first entered Parliament through as well. So, you know, probably no surprise that he's talking to Pauline Hanson, or she wants to talk to him this coming week. I think that the last, she actually missed the last sitting week because she was over in the United States, so which was obviously when the news broke about that he might possibly jump ship to One Nation, though I don't know whether it would happen before the election or not.
She might have souvenired a few MAGA hats to give to Barnaby.
She might have.
To the federal government's position as we approach the final parliamentary week for the year next week, dozens of business groups have united in a call for Labor and the Coalition to work together to make sensible changes to environment laws. Now, this piece of legislation, as you and I have discussed in the past, is important. The next few days are viewed as critical to trying to land a deal on this environmental legislation. Environment Minister Murray Watt sounds like he's ready to compromise. He says he's happy to work with either side, either the Coalition or Green senators, to see the bill move through the Senate.
But I'm a realist when it comes to getting legislation through the Senate. I recognise that we will need to make some amendments to the legislation as we've introduced it. And so what we need from both the Coalition and the Greens is for them to come to a landing on exactly what amendments they would be seeking. And, of course, we will then weigh that up.
Mm. The Labor government say they want to pass this before Christmas. That's ambitious, isn't it? I mean, to put it politely.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if they get a deal in the Senate, they get a deal and they can get the votes through pretty quick. Murray, what was actually sounding even a bit more definite when he spoke this morning in WA, saying, you know, we will pass it next week. I think he genuinely is open to going with either side. I was going round and round on this with a colleague this morning who was saying, but surely he can't possibly do a deal with the Greens. You know, all the business groups, the resources companies in WA are really worried about that happening. But I think that at this stage, you know, having had an attempt on this already a year ago, I think, and no election looming in the near future, I think the government is genuine about wanting to get this done, and they will turn to whoever says yes with the least number of changes. So I believe Murray Watt's meeting again with the Shadow Minister Angie Bell and the Greens spokeswoman Sarah Hanson-Young later this week, meeting them separately, but meeting both of them and really hoping to get a bit more concrete details from them about exactly what the changes are that they want, and then he'll have a look at kind of who's offering the best deal.
Yep. Now, finally, Katina, it's nice work if you can get it. You've been looking at the wages of a host of public servant executives. These are employees who use a pejorative term, the fat cats of Canberra, I suspect, earning more than $1 million a year, topped by the boss of Australia Post, Paul Graham, who doesn't lick his own stamps anymore because he's got somebody to do that, taking home more than $3.3 million.
That's right, and $1.5 million of that was in bonuses.
But how about this? Some 9 executives in Australia Post all earn more than $1 million. Gee whiz. Okay. What else did you find?
Yes, so there was overall, so this was looking at government departments, but also government-owned corporate entities like Australia Post is. Across all, I looked at just over 100 different entities, and there was 18 where the heads of them earned more than $1 million. So as you say, AusPost at the top of the list, Snowy Hydro boss on just over $2 million, and the NBN co boss on just under $2 million, but she was only in the job for 7 months of the financial year. So I think she'd be probably somewhere between 2.5 and 2.9 in the full year. A number of departmental secretaries on more than $1 million a year as well, which is, significantly more than the PM earns. His pay is set by the Remuneration Tribunal, which the departmental pays, secretary pay is as well. The PM's on, I think, about 622,000 a year. So, you know, a number of the bosses of departments earning significantly more than that as well. So, yes, so that was the heads of these organisations. And then there was another sort of half dozen organisations where all up there was about another 19 senior executives, so 37 in total on more than $1 million a year.
There you go. All right. The argument's always been if you want top talent, you've got to pay. Maybe.
It could be. I mean, some of them, I think, so across those Australia Post executives, the amount that of their pay that was bonuses actually almost doubled compared with the year earlier. Mm. So, you know, certainly some questions being raised from the opposition shadow minister about, you know, why the performance of Australia Post over the past year may or may not have merited those bonuses.
It wouldn't have figured largely in people's. I mean, I know the reliability of us getting our magic magnets out for our quiz winners is pretty poor, and they go out to the Australia Post. Anyway, Katina, it's always terrific to have your insights on the program. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.